listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. More fallout this week from the Helsinki conference between Presidents Trump and Putin. We go to Moscow to speak to Mark Sloboda, senior lecturer in international relations at Moscow State University. We spoke with him via Skype from Moscow Friday. Well, Mark, it's been a hell of a week. That's all I can say.
Hi, Don. It's glad to be on. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be on CPR. The weeks all just kind of run together at this point for me. I can't even differentiate them anymore. But certainly I understand the hysteria over there. Back in the States has kind of reached a fever pitch. I almost expect to find Russians lynched outside, the White House, maybe hung on the fences of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah, no kidding. I have some friends that are, of Russian ancestry here whose kids have been having some problems in school for a few months now.
There's this case with Maria Butina.
Really?
Now, so you've heard about this, right?
Yeah, she's a gun nut, basically.
She's a gun nut. Yeah. And so let me preface off this conversation that I am not a gun nut. I don't believe in gun nutter rights. I believe in the Second Amendment in terms of a well-ordered militia. And I certainly have no problems with a licensed and registered hunting rifles for those who have the knowledge and purpose to use them. But I'm no gun nut. And certainly I oppose the infection or, of the idea from the United States to Russia that has been going on for a long time.
Right.
And ironically, Maria Butina is one of these. She is a advocate for gun rights in Russia. At least in those respects, she would certainly fall into conservative category. I consider myself a conservative on socially on some things, but certainly not on this issue. Russia's murder rate is high enough the way it is. It's still quite high. Even as alcoholism goes down, the murder rate goes down, but it's it taking some time. And we certainly don't need to add to the homicide rate with guns. Thank you.
Right.
But that being said, all right, she is an extremely fringe political figure here in Russia. U.S. government-backed liberal nationalist, ultra-nationalist opposition figure, Alexei Navalny. Mm-hmm. He is also a gun nut, by the way, as well as being a xenophobe and an Islamophobe and an ultra-nationalist and a racist and a neoliberal and all these other wonderful things.
So he's like a darling of the CIA and of the United States, all the liberals in the United States and such, right? So
yeah. He has actually supported Maria Butina, which is no That's surprise for those who live here, because there's quite a different image presented of Alexei Navalny in the West, where he's heralded as some kind of liberal anti-corruption crusader rather than an ultra-nationalist, racist, gun-nut, neoliberal, and twice-convicted fraudster.
Right.
But, you know, that's... On top of that, you have the situation where, because Maria Butina has been... has posted some extreme political views with guns and what should be done with guns alongside the same idea of Alexei Navalny, some of her social media posts have actually been censored in Russia. Mm. So she is no friend of the Russian government,
right?
You know, despite the way they are portraying this in the West. They're trying to say that she was in, she's close to Putin's circle, I believe was the phrase I heard,
right?
Because she evidently had a relationship that was possibly both romantic and political with a man who is a vice secretary at a third-tier state bank,
right?
Tenth in line in the bank hierarchy,
right?
I mean, to say that this is close to Putin, it's like saying, I don't know, the Montana dog catcher has a relationship with someone, some small town, you know, some sheriff in somewhere. It's really quite absurd.
She was going out with some guy that she knows at the bank who's not exactly a rising star at the moment, right?
Yeah, exactly. But she found much more receptive views, area for her views, not in Russia, but in the United States,
right?
Where she started associating with the NRA. And it must be said, also in the EU, where she associated with groups who are supporting gun rights there. Now, Maria Butina is the ironic thing about it, is the U.S. has sent legions of unfortunately often government paid, some who are not government paid, but activists, lobbyists, however you want to find NGO employees. I think they're usually more gongos, government organized NGOs, okay, over to Russia to cultivate its values. You want to call it soft power, you want to call it sharp power, that's what it is. Nowadays they call it meddling. They call it political interference in society. Maria Butina is the clearest example of Russian civil society talking to American civil society. Yeah. Now, it happens to be conservative, not international liberal civil society. And even though it is, you know, falls in the conservative spectrum, I certainly don't support what she does, what she supports. She is quite, as well as being a gun nut, she is also quite a proponent of capitalism, and often in its neoliberal variety.
Right.
Those two often go together. But she is quite clearly not affiliated in any meaningful way with the Russian government.
Right.
And evidently she slept with some people that she was close to in the U.S. as she's pursuing gun rights issues there. Well, this isn't that strange, right?
She's a young woman in her late 20s.
Yeah, young woman.
Yeah.
It should be said, there's often an issue of men unduly using their influence on young women, right? Mm. You know, the whole Me Too movement, a sex in exchange for advancement.
Right.
I would say rarely, but sometimes it does actually go the other way, where the woman is actually propositioning. Of course, both people are at fault in that situation, right?
And they're all grown-ups, too,
by the way. That's clearly it's also a form of corruption, undoubtedly. Yeah. But, she has been arrested for being an unregistered agent under the Foreign Agent Registration Act. Now, I have not seen any evidence that she was in any way doing what she was doing on behalf of the Russian government. That's right. The thing. She is a gun rights individual. She is pursuing value-laden politics that happens to be cross-border. We usually only think of these things as perhaps leftist or liberal, but occasionally conservatives across borders actually have some issues in common.
Right.
And this happens to be one of them.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this now, is, you don't have in Russia that I'm aware of, I mean, I don't know, but I'm surmising this, the equivalent of a gun show in a Walmart parking lot, like they do, in Texas or whatever here. She, though, frequents those here and would bring those to Russia. That's my read of the situation.
Yeah. This is just so absurd. Second of all, even if you did consider her a foreign agent because she just happens to be Russian, residing in the U.S., there are so many unregistered foreign agents from Israel, from the EU, from China. This is really so ridiculously selectively applied. I mean, you would have to open whole new prisons, federal prisons, to lock up the unregistered lobbyists.
Right.
I think this is a key indicator of just how hysterical the situation has got there. And I hope, my first reaction, other than a little bit of amusement and anger, is Russia going to respond and lock up any activist lobbyist, in Russia who is promoting liberal values, on the basis that now anyone from the United States, dealing in any kind of social issues is automatically now a spy, a meddler, a influence, an agent of influence or so on. And, it has to be said that Russia certainly doesn't like people interfering in its politics, but not to the extent of going after people like Maria Butina. But Russia hasn't responded, and I don't see that they're going to right at the moment because they regard this as some kind of hysteria. I don't even think they feel it dignifies a response, other than that the Ford Ministry is starting a hashtag campaign for freeing her, which, of course, I don't expect to go very far. In fact, I saw a Guardian journalist express outrage that the Ford Ministry was doing this. That it was some type of war, maybe a war on Twitter, but a war. And her Twitter feed was flooded with images sending her pictures of actual wars in Yemen and Syria and Somalia. So she knows what one looks like because she obviously doesn't know what war is, much less war between the U.S. and Russia.
Yeah. I'm looking at, meanwhile, the discussion about the so-called KGB agents, the ones who were in the state, federal security bureau, that have been indicted here, that were the subject of conversation apparently between Putin and Trump, where Putin pushes back and says, "Hey, we can arrange for you to interview them here. By the way, there's a whole lot of folks we would probably want to talk to of yours over there, like people who were playing around in Ukraine, like people who played around in here during the 90s, like that guy who walked off with all the billions of dollars from here, and like your ex-ambassador here in Moscow. And that's kind of an interesting revelation, really, that, you know, hey, this might have some, you know, some balance to contextualize it.
Yeah, this is interesting. First of all, there, Bloomberg put out a piece, I think it's also been talked about elsewhere, that I guess is some type of leak from within the White House, that Trump specifically wanted and issued an order for these indictments to go out before the summit, because he thought that they would provide leverage for him against Putin.
Really?
Read it for yourself. I'm not entirely convinced by it, but it certainly is possible. It certainly didn't have the desired effect, I would guess, if that was the intent.
But he did make that claim going into the thing anyway. I mean, he said, hey, look, all this does is give me more leverage. He said that before the summit.
Summit, yeah. Now, first of all, Donald Trump's performance during the summit, the argument here is that it is no big success for Putin. I know that's the argument being presented in the West, that Putin won, we were humiliated, that this is some great victory for Putin, showing that we've completely lost our sovereignty and our president is a Manchurian candidate. What does he have on Trump and so on? Well, that's not the way it's being played here. The way it's being played here is that Donald Trump's performance, you know, even if he was trying to improve relations with Russia, was so incoherent, so unhinged, going off into insecure rants about justifying, you know, his electoral victory and the Electoral College and so on, that it was really quite humiliating. I can't imagine, you know, Putin, you know, it's hard, of course, to judge the man. Was he secretly thrilled at this chaos and the weakness of the American president, or did he just feel a little bit of pity? I honestly don't know. But the idea here is that even if Trump wants to improve relations, he's got such domestic problems at home, however much of a witch hunt it is, it can't be ignored, that he seriously can't do anything with Russia. In fact, most likely because of the pressure on him because of this situation and those around him. I mean, by any demonstrable measure, he has had a far worse relationship with Russia other than the rhetoric than Obama did. I mean, he's bombed Syria directly several times. Including bases where Russian troops were.
That's right.
He has killed Russian security contractors. The only real question is exactly how many and under what the exact circumstances were. But evidently he was quite proud and bragging about that. He's threatened to sanction Germany if they complete a planned Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline with Russia. He's leveled sanctions. He's kicked out far more diplomats over this Skripal affair with absolutely no evidence whatsoever, simply as a show of bloc solidarity with what the United Kingdom government has claimed, again, without any evidence whatsoever. And you could go on and on with this. By any objective measurement, his government has been far more conflictual, far more punitive with Russia other than the rhetoric. That is a noticeable distinction. And again, I don't know if this is Trump or if this is the people around him and the political pressure pushing him, but you know it's a reality, and certainly it is felt that way here. And the end question is: was this summit, will it actually end up hurting U.S. Russia relations rather than helping them, because of the situation that Trump finds himself in politically with political opponents at home and this whole hysteria and witch hunt against him? So it is not being celebrated here. And when it comes to these indictments and Russia's response to it, and a lot of people don't understand that. and it's certainly not being reported this way in the Western press. When Putin suggested to Trump that it, again, this supposedly happened behind closed doors, and we don't know exactly what was said there. There was only two interpreters in the room, one for each of them. The conversation went on for about 2 hours. But evidently, at least part of it, Putin requested that, he suggested that, perhaps he could allow the U.S. to interview the GRU agents, you know, the Russian version of the Defense Intelligence Agency, that are for some odd reason claimed to have been involved in this political party hacking, with the Democratic Party servers and exposing that Hillary Clinton rigged the Democratic Party primary. Right. Something that, of course, is completely neglected. Oh, they hacked us. They hacked us. No one ever wants to look at the substance of what the supposed hack that WikiLeaks presented on this, because that you might actually call that democratization then, and I think entirely accurately, if whoever was responsible, be it a whistleblower through WikiLeaks or Russia or someone else. But Putin's suggestion that you could interview these GRU agents that you're making these allegations against, if you allowed us to interview Bill Browder, this corrupt businessman who made off with extremely large sums of Russian money through various illegal tax schemes and corruption, and then evidently, at least according to Putin, in a roundabout way, transferred this money to Hillary Clinton's campaign. I haven't seen any reporting on any confirmation or veracity of that claim, but I doubt that he would bring it up at such a format unless there was some type of substance to it at the least. But I haven't seen any investigation of that in the Western media whatsoever, but also of several NSA, national security agents, the ones who actually do the hacking and the spying online for the U.S. government, and the former U.S. ambassador under Obama to Russia, Michael McFaul, who called himself a color revolution expert. And he's the person that when he came to Russia as the ambassador, before he even presented his credentials to Putin as ambassador to the Russian government, he was meeting with fringe liberal opposition figures in the embassy. He invited them to the embassy before. I mean, if that's not a clear intention of what you intend to do while you're there. And he ran, what he did while he was here is exactly the type of political destabilizing interference, meddling, that the U.S. resistance is now perhaps hypocritically, perhaps a bit of psychological projection, accusing Russia of doing. So that's specifically why Putin made this idea. It's not being reported as a quid pro quo at all, just that he wanted to interrogate them. But this is Russia's response to the U.S. request for the transfer of these GRU agents to the United States, when there is no extradition treaty between the U.S. and Russia, and it is the U.S. that has repeatedly refused to sign one with Russia.
Right.
Because Russia, there's quite a few Chechen warlords and terrorists still being harbored in the United States that Russia has long been upset about that the U.S. won't extradite. So it wasn't meant to be a serious offer. This is what they're not getting.
Right.
It was... Sarah Huckabee Sanders even said it was sincere. No, it was not sincere. It was
rhetorical.
Of course, it was rhetorical. It was meant to highlight the absurdity of the U.S. demand that these Russian military intelligence agents be shipped to them.
Right.
And I have to think that the people in the Kremlin have to be a little bit of despairing at this point. When such obvious political signaling is completely misreported and misinterpreted by so many people who claim to be Russia agents, and we must assume many figures in the government, because that's who they get their information and their ideas from, I think the Kremlin's kind of got to be facepalming itself here, saying, do we have to come out and spell it for you? We're trying to make a point about the equivalence here and what you're suggesting. And you can't even, I don't know whether you can't accept it or you don't understand what we were trying to point out here.
It's almost like it's over their heads because it's so.
Yeah, it is. You know, it is. And that's really, it's really sad. It's really, it's really sad. And it shows how far relations. Now, I have heard one good piece of evidence. There's been all kinds of rumors that Putin suggested a second Donbass referendum as a way of solving that. There's no definitive on how real this was or not. There's suggestions that Trump invited Putin to the White House, which in the current political climate, I do not think is a good idea. It's probably not even safe for the Russian president.
Right.
You know, there were some other things that were evidently discussed. And there's, of course, lots of discussions over what Trump has or Putin has over Trump, whatever PP tapes or, you know, whatever the dodgy dossier rumor mill is feeding here. But I did hear the first bit of positive news out of this summit, and I don't think there was really any, that they have at least begun closed door meetings between Russia and the U.S. on the initial discussions about crafting successors to the New START and the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, which is, you know, at the top of the list of the many type of such treaties that should obviously include cyber warfare, hypersonic weapons, machine learning and artificial intelligence and military use and so on. That serious stuff that needs to be addressed by these two countries. And of course, we can't even dream, I guess, of them actually sitting down and addressing climate change with Trump's opinion on it. You know, but, you know, there are so many things in this world that, of course, many of these things do require more than the U.S. and Russia. They also, you know, have to include China, the EU, India, the other major great powers.
Right.
But at the, you know, this is probably the most conflictual relationship right here that exists between any country other than perhaps India and Pakistan.
Right.
And it has to be worked out. They have to, you know, at least be able to cooperate on these basic issues that are necessary for the citizens of both countries' survival, like the a New START treaty and a new INF treaty, you know, with the risk of nuclear oblivion, which is still very real. The Bulletin of Atomic Scientists has the clock at some 2 minutes to midnight, which it has not been since the late 1950s, as far as I know.
Yeah, even during the Cuban Missile Crisis, it's like it's closer than that, according to, I don't know about whether it's that group of scientists, but I know that the Stephen Cohen and some other experts believe that for sure. You know, so what we get back, meanwhile, well, we're closing in on the last 4 minutes or so. We get back from this, you know, attempt by, you know, which I saw it. Just anybody that, you know, that's past the age of 14 should see Russia saying, hey, look, you know, you want to come in here and start interviewing our, you know, intelligence people and everything else with these baloney accusations. You have sent some guys here that have done some bad stuff. Let's talk to them, like the guy that's got $1 billion. What we get out of the U.S., 98-0 Senate resolution. They can't even vote themselves a raise that unanimously because, you know, McCain is on his deathbed and I don't know who else was missing, but 98-0. This is crafted by Chuck Schumer and the Republican majority leader allowed this to be voted on, drafted by Schumer. It's the sense of Congress that the United States should refuse to make available any current or former diplomat, civil servant, political appointee, law enforcement official, or member of the armed forces of the United States for questioning by the government of Vladimir Putin, period. And it means nothing. It's essentially the Congress resolution, but they're unanimous about it.
I realize it's a political statement. I actually don't have a problem with that. Russia wouldn't allow that. And that's the whole point of what they did,
right,
by pointing out people who have meddled in Russian politics.
Right.
And, you know, again, the U.S. refuses to acknowledge that they have done this.
Right.
Right. That they have interfered not only in Russia's politics, but interfered in countries around the world.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people say, oh, one one bad thing does not justify another. Well, you know, the world doesn't deal in moral high ground. The world deals in an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. And anyone who can't realize the realist nature of that, you know, needs to question their relation to reality.
You know, not even just that, by the way. On the one hand, this one is accusing somebody of, you know, scratching someone else's neck. And you turn around and say the person making the accusation is Jack the Ripper.
Yeah,
you know, you've strangled 20 people or whatever. You're talking about somebody scratching somebody's neck.
So, it's unfortunately at the point where we can't even have an adult conversation between the two countries anymore. Michael Hayden, who was the director of the National Security Agency and the CIA, in a speech to the Heritage Foundation said last year, unfortunately, he calls what he claims that Russia did with the hacking of the DNC honorable. He says, unfortunately, I have to call that honorable state espionage. He says hacking the major political parties in a major foreign adversary. He said, game on.
Right.
That's what we do.
Right.
And then he said, I would hate to have to testify before Congress that I never did anything like that. As head of the National Security Agency.
Yep. And, you know, we've got to close on this, but yeah. I saw people suggesting that the way to have a private conversation between heads of state would be on the telephone. And all I could think of is Angela Merkel and Dilma Rousseff's telephone having been bugged and caught being bugged by the Obama administration. So, Mark, it gets curiouser and curiouser. We'll talk about it some more next week as things develop.
Great. Thanks for having me, Don.
Thanks for being with us.
Hang in there, guys.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Some call Donald Trump a traitor and the Helsinki summit treasonous. As the media continue their meltdown, a second summit is in the works to be held in Washington. What was accomplished in Helsinki and what is the point of a sequel summit? Crosstalking Summits, I'm joined by my guest, Mark Sloboda. He's an international affairs and security analyst. And in Cyprus, we cross to Alex Christofora. He is the director and writer for the Duran.com. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Alex, let me go to you first in Cyprus. In this program, I want to talk about what was and what could happen. So let's unpack Helsinki. I don't necessarily think that it was a failure for Donald Trump as it was a failure for the media and their continued meltdown. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it was. We don't really know many details as to the actual policy that was discussed between the two leaders in Helsinki. And one of the reasons we don't know that much about the meeting, which we should be discussing policy, because after all, that's why they met. And that's the important part of the summit. All we're hearing about from the media is the meltdown over how Trump is a traitor, how Putin is a thug, how Trump sold out the United States of America. And this mass hysteria is clouding and it's fogging up any discussion as to what the policy that these men discussed was. What did they talk about regarding Syria, regarding Ukraine, regarding nuclear proliferation? No one's really discussing any of the details and the important stuff. And all we're hearing is this complete hysteria about Russia, about Trump, about how he's a puppet of the Kremlin. And it's reached the point where it's madness. I mean, you have to be beyond stupid to believe that Trump is some sort of Kremlin spy, some sort of Kremlin puppet. It's beyond dumb.
Yeah.
But that's the narrative that they're pushing, Peter, 24/7.
Yeah, I know. Mark, you know, your take on this, because, I mean, I don't know if they believe it, but they want the public to believe it. This is the ultimate expression of their rage over the 2016 election. They still haven't gotten over it.
neither has Donald Trump.
good point. As was That's evidenced. A very good point.
Now, I agree with Alex Christoforos' last statement, that the idea that it's idiocy, that he's some type of Manchurian candidate or something, but everything else I disagree with. Of course, there was no policy being discussed because there was no policy settled. That we don't know that there was any policy talked about. I'm not quite sure that Donald Trump really has the capability to discuss policy on a level and a par with Vladimir Putin. Certainly no deliverables, no preparations were made. Anything that Trump and Putin, too, agreed in private, if they agreed to anything, doesn't exist.
So Trump is partly responsible for the media reaction, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Trump's performance was incoherent, unhinged. It showed how insecure he was with his own electoral victory. He's standing there next to the president of Russia and devolving in the conversations about how he beat Hillary, ranting about the electoral college. And so on. I don't know what was going through Putin's head as he was standing there, but all I kept thinking that Putin would think is, my God, they really will think that you are my puppet after this. And perhaps a little bit of Schadenfreude, right? This is Russia's adversary on the world stage, and its leader is completely melting down standing next to him.
Well, I mean, it's just not, let me go back to Alex here. It's just not, Donald Trump didn't perform as well as he should have. I think a lot of it was self-inflicted. Mark is absolutely right. I mean, here he is in a summit in Helsinki, standing next to Vladimir Putin, and he's talking about the Electoral College. I was in utter shock, okay, that he said that. However, the media, the Trump was triggered, and then the media was triggered. I mean, it was this kind of a mutual destruction. Okay, everybody was triggered, and you have Vladimir Putin kind of standing next to him, like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think no matter where Trump goes, or no matter who he speaks with on an international level, it's always going to go back to this narrative. I don't think there's anything the media can talk about anymore, or even wants to talk about, whether it's Stormy Daniels and creepy porn lawyer, or Russia meddling, or the fact that he's tearing children away from their moms, and immigration. It's no matter what Trump does, it's always going to go back to these basic narratives, these basic points that the media continues to push. And these are points that the American public, especially the flyover states, the people that are going to be voting in the midterm, a large amount of those people that are going to be voting don't really care about. They just don't care about it. The economy is doing well.
Alex, that's a really interesting point, because his base, and I'm going to turn to Mark now, the base seems to be, so what? Okay. Donald Trump promised to engage the Russian leader. He has. And I will do it. He checked it off on the back of his envelope in his jacket. Met Putin. Let's keep going. Mark.
I agree completely. Let's talk the numbers, right? I thought Trump's performance was horrible, unhinged, and incoherent, but I'm no longer the target audience. Let's discuss the target audience, okay? So Axios's poll, published in Newsweek, shows that 79% of Republican voters thought it was a successful summit and that Trump did well. I don't know how, but that's what they think.
And presumably these are a lot of Fox viewers, too.
Now, the opposite polarization, 91% of Democrats did not think so. And 62% of independents also did not think so. But this might give Donald hope some Trump going into the midterms. Independents tend not to vote during midterms. And he makes it. Gallup also has a poll out that's very important. It asks the question of a whole series of issues, a lengthy series of issues. What do Americans feel is the most important problems facing the country? Their government and leadership was high at the top, as was immigration, as was racism. Down near the almost absolute bottom is problems with the situation with Russia. In fact, the numbers were so small it didn't even register statistically. So I think to a large extent, he's right that this again, foreign policy is not necessarily the most important thing on Americans' minds, either during the elections or in between them. And I honestly think that most Americans who are not part of the active resistance conspiracy theorists are a little tired of the whole thing.
You know, Alex, you know, go ahead, because we just kind of broaden it out.
Small comment, just to put,
go ahead.
To put some perspective, yesterday on CNN, Michael Avenatti was back on discussing the Stormy Daniels stuff and the Michael Cohen stuff. It's just in a continuous loop.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
You're absolutely right. But one of the things, Alex, I think that, you know, the liberal media doesn't want to talk about is that Donald Trump's popularity is higher than it is with Congress, higher it is than it is with the media. So, I mean, again, if you kind of step back, you know, there's a broader perspective here. In the second half of the program, I want to talk about the Washington summit. But, Alex, I want to stay with you. One of the things I found kind of curious and looking at cable, particularly at Fox, I didn't see a lot of people coming out defending the president. Very few. Except Gorka came out.
Rand Paul.
But that's different, okay? Yeah, because he's not part of the Trump team. Right. But I didn't see a lot of Trump world people coming out defending the president. I found that odd. Alex.
Well, I think when it comes to Russia and to Putin, you're going to get both left and right speaking out in unison. And I think it's a situation where Trump cannot win when it specifically comes to Russia and when it comes to the intelligence community. Because in today's world, if you say anything, in today's America, if you say anything against the intelligence community, anything, it's heresy. You just cannot do it. It doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat.
I find that absolutely hysterically disappointing, Mark. There's a lot to criticize the intelligence community for. Lots of it. Yeah. For decades, okay? I mean, this is how this manufactured consent that the media is complicit with. We should be having a conversation about it, okay? But I know that's politically risky, and I'll give Trump that. He just stumbled his way through that criticism. That's what disappointed me. Go ahead.
Yeah, never mind how many times the intelligence community in recent memory has lied to the American people, from the Iraq war to James Clapper lying on surveillance to Libya, talking about genocide to Syria, moderate rebels, right? We've heard all of this, but it's pure partisanship. Right in the run-up to the election, when Democrats believed that Comey's investigation of email servers, which really wasn't an investigation at all,
that we know now,
they were decrying the intelligence community at the time. They thought it was sabotaging their queen-to-be's victory. So you see how partisan shifts opinions on this completely regardless of any real facts. I think we should stop talking about it as the corporate mainstream media and start talking about it as the media intelligence complex.
There's a good point.
When John Brennan and James Clapper, out of their positions as the very embodiments of the deep state at the CNI and Director of National Intelligence, are now the pundits giving you your propaganda, telling you what you should think about such things, particularly foreign policy, directly, not even a middleman.
Let me go to the break here. Alex, Comey, Clapper, Brennan, unsurprising, they're coming out as the spokespeople for the intelligence community through the good services of the liberal media. They all need to be deposed and they all need to be questioned about their behavior during the 2016 election.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting things about Trump derangement syndrome is that every now and then it starts to unmask another member of the deep state. Yep. And in this go around, we saw Brennan unmasked. We've seen Peter Strzok, we've seen Comey, we've seen all these guys. But in this particular case, we saw Brennan really lash out. And now a lot of people are asking questions about Brennan and his role in the entire Russiagate Steele dossier narrative that's been going on. So Brennan almost brought focus to himself because of his hysteria.
John Brennan, being the spokesman, supposedly decrying Trump's talk about a deep state, he is the deep state. So I'm not sure he's the one talking about.
I would posit he's treasonous. Mark, I have to jump in. We have to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on summits. Stay with RT.
You're listening to Weekday World
on CPR.
Okay, let me go back to Mark here. And right before we went to the break, I think you mentioned the Washington Post.
So I mean, the Western media was decrying this summit as Pearl Harbor, the Gulf of Tonkin, 9/11, Kristallnacht. These are the descriptions I heard of it. It wasn't any of those things. It might have been embarrassing. Trump wasn't prepared for it. But the Washington Post summed up, I think, the idea of their view coming out of this summit perfectly. Washington Post article by Eugene Robinson yesterday, God bless the deep state.
My God.
I think that only the deep state stands between us and the abyss at this point. And they're not even hiding it anymore. I mean, they're not even pretending otherwise. Meanwhile, Russian media has the exact opposite perspective. They have a very sober and muted respect coming out of this summit. They do not regard it as Putin's victory over the United States or anything like that. In fact, they worry that Trump's performance was so bad and he faces such significant domestic partisan political hurdles over it that it may end up hurting U.S.-Russia relations rather than moving them a step forward.
You know, Alex, let me go back to you in Cyprus. I think Mark sums it up very, very well there. Why the second summit so quickly on the heels of Helsinki? As you pointed out in the top of the program, we really don't know what policy was discussed, though we may talk later. I have a feeling that some of the ideas that were surrounding Syria are already being enacted. OK, we could talk about that a little bit later. But I mean, why so quickly? Does Trump want another bite at the apple? Go ahead, Alex.
I think this is kind of typical Trump in a way, in that he had his performance in Helsinki. After that performance, and after probably a lot of pressure, I imagine from his own insiders and from his own staff, he gave kind of a quasi apology, quasi walked it back a little. He didn't walk it back full, but he did kind of apologize a little bit to the intelligence community, and he did say, "I recognize that Russia meddled in the elections."
I thought that looked like a hostage video.
Yeah, myself. I did.
He had a political gun pointed at the back of his head.
Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, you could tell Trump wasn't buying into it. And you could tell that he was just saying it because he was probably being obliged or forced to say it. But then you have the tweets coming out about another summit. And so I think this is very much Trump's way of just kind of maybe, you know, pressing forward. And as we said, he hits that checklist. And no matter what hits him, he wants to tick off those things on his checklist. And he wants to also stick it in the face of these deep state guys in this media and to show in a way that, look, I may have given a little bit of a walk back, but I'm not backing down. And I think the next move for Trump, before he goes to any kind of summit in Washington, he needs to hit that base. He needs to go somewhere in Middle America and give some rallies, give some speeches. That's where his wheelhouse is. I think we're all starting to realize and understand that Trump at this moment as U.S. president, going on these summits and meeting with these world leaders is not his forte. This is not where he's at his best. He's at his best is where he's talking to his base, and he's talking about things that are important to him, the wall, immigration, these things. You can tell he cares about these things, and that's when he's at his best.
Yeah, you know, Mark, I mean, first of all, what did the media expect from Helsinki? Did they want a meltdown summit? I guess that's what they wanted. Well, but what would that achieve?
They were afraid that the United States Trump would recognize the reunification of Crimea with Russia, or that some deal would be reached in the Donbass and Ukraine, or that Trump would do what he actually said he would do and pull U.S. troops out of Syria, something like that. So this is what they're afraid of. That we know happened.
Yeah, but okay, well then it didn't happen. So what's your crystal ball tell us about a summit in Washington?
Yeah.
Because what has to change for a different, at least the optics to perception? That's why I'm very cautious about this.
Yeah.
You and I talked before many times. We're both basically on the same page. It has to be about policy and what you achieve.
Yeah. I don't think this is a good idea for either side. I think Cristoforo is exactly right. Trump needs to attend to his midterm elections. Domestic politics is all he really seems to care about anyway.
So when is this summit, before or after the midterms?
If I would think the smart thing would be to put it after the midterms. He seems to think otherwise, and that he can spin the what will surely be the mainstream media fury to his advantage.
Let me ask Alex Christopher about that. What do you think, Alex? I mean, I think they're being very cryptic on purpose. Summit yeah. before
I think it's after.
Or after.
I can't imagine him fitting it in before November. I mean, he's got the Supreme Court justice to get into place. He's got to rally, and he's got to go to get the Republicans elected to win the House and the Senate. I just don't see how Trump can possibly even fit it in, even if it is a good idea. Yeah. I don't think how he can fit it in until way after the midterms.
Yeah. Let's not even talk about winning the House and Senate. Let's talk about not losing them too badly, as is normal yeah. for a president's midterm
yeah,
elections.
Yeah, but the generic vote yes. is actually favoring yeah. a minimal decline for the Republicans. But we've got a long way to go.
We've got a long way to go, and we learned in the last election that polls are not the end-all, be-all of everything. So I think from a Russian perspective, they're actually interested in getting things done. The Western media seems that all Russia wants is legitimacy, as if the only way the Russian president can gain legitimacy is if America's imperial grace descends on him and he blesses him with the chrism of legitimacy and so on. This is ridiculous. Russia wants its national, its legitimate national and security interests respected and compromised and dealt with on by a rogue hyperpower that thinks the whole world is its sphere of interest and it's above international law. So, there was one good positive thing I heard coming out of this summit, very quietly, not being reported on by the Western media. The Russian state TASS information service has it. Closed-door meetings, finally, about a new START and a renewal of New START and a new intermediate range nuclear forces treaty are going on. If they're smart, it will also include cyber warfare, which the U.S. has already always denied. But that is positive. But that doesn't need Trump and Putin sitting down to do yeah. that. That can be done. It should be done at a lower State Department and other security apparatus
level. You're absolutely right. Alex, I'll get back to you because I don't understand. I mean, it seems to me that Trump wants to paper over what he probably believes deep inside, the less than stellar performance in Helsinki. He wants another shot at it. But Mark is absolutely right. I mean, we know what the issues are. They have been identified. And now we need to get the State Department and the Russian Foreign Ministry to get to work on them. I don't understand why they have to meet again so shortly, okay?
Well, maybe Trump also sees it as being in Washington, he'll be more comfortable and he'll be in better form when it's in Washington. You know, he hosted Macron in D.C. And obviously Trump is more comfortable in that element. But we also have to remember, Russia also has to agree to some sort of summit in D.C. So I just don't see it as something that's going to happen in the near future. And I hope it doesn't happen in the near future, because I think that Trump, the United States, as well as Russia, whether they're dealing with their own stuff or whether they're working on stuff together, have a lot of stuff to do yeah. before these two leaders meet again.
Frankly, from a Russian, very pragmatic standpoint, on top of maybe hurting Trump more domestically and the issue, can any policy be done? There's also a question of basic security with the hysteria, the neo-McCarthyite political current. Russian security would have to really be on the ball to keep Putin
safe. That is the very first thing I thought of. Yeah. Absolutely the first thing I thought. Yeah. Mark, can maybe flesh this out a little bit more. I mean, how do you think Vladimir Putin understood the summit? Because is Trump a president because of the hostility of the deep state and of the media? Is he in a position really to move the needle in one way or the other on any of these
yeah.
issues?
Yeah, the official word from Putin is that the summit was more substantive than he thought it would be. I don't want to presume to know how substantive he thought it would be beforehand. I don't see much substance coming out of it, at least not what we know publicly. I think what a lot of the Russian elite are at least worried about is that Trump is not a partner who can get things done.
Yeah.
That he's not in control of his own foreign and security policy. That anything that Russia, any meeting, any photo ops like this that Trump seems to crave, you know, the limelight of the camera would actually hurt him more than harm him, and isn't going to do Russia any favors as well. But I think we should talk about what Trump's motivation is. I mean, I think it's clear he's got personal grievances against many of the leaders of the EU and his own intelligence committee over the election. I think he does admire Putin. I know that's an unpopular political opinion in the U.S. I think he sees what the Russian people see, how much Putin has done for the Russian people since the catastrophe of the 1990s, how far he's brought the country back, both on a domestic individual level, when we're talking wages and so far, all the way up to Russia's strength in the world. But Henry Kissinger has been pushing the idea that what should be going on a grand strategic perspective is a realignment of the U.S. geopolitically, trying to drive apart the growing alliance between Russia and China.
Don't you think it's too late? I absolutely think it's too late.
I hope it's too late. I think that Putin is far too intelligent at this point. He knows that the next election is going to see a reversal. But Kissinger said back in 1972, he said, in 20 years, speaking to Nixon, your successor, if he's as wise as you, will wind up leaning towards the Russians against the Chinese, because it was Kissinger who helped lead Nixon to split.
Last 30 seconds go to you, Alex. Maybe the summit in Helsinki in Washington is to make sure relations don't deteriorate more, just damage control. And if that's the thought, I think it's wrong-headed. Go ahead, Alex.
It's possibly with Trump. You don't know. My hunch is there's so many actors that do have an agenda within Trump's inner circle. Let's not forget, we haven't talked about Mike Pompeo. We haven't talked about Bolton and what he wants and what's his motivation. So I think there's a lot of forces at work that are also pulling and pushing Trump in different directions.
Yep.
And I think you have Trump who's, at the end of the day, I just don't see he's as engaged in foreign policy and international affairs as he is with the domestics.
Okay, on that note, Alex, I'm going to jump in here. We've run out of time. Many thanks to my guests here in Moscow and in Cyprus. This is the end of our broadcast segment. Stay with us for the extended version on our YouTube channel. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk rules.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, CommunityPublicRadio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.